Good morning, everybody. I'm going to do a quick review of what we did yesterday. So yesterday we did a review on what we should do in order to apply this LQE formalism into four-dimensional gravity. I would like to stress the motivation of this, since this is what we see experimentally. This is, so far, experimentalists have told us, like, the world seems 4D, so you should focus on trying to do gravity in 4D. So I would say this is a really strong motivation for us, among many others. So first of all, we began historically by saying what was the ADM formalism. It is a canonical analysis of Einstein's gravity. As we know, we have to split time and space. And from there, we get a spatial metric to work with as our variables, as our space phase variables, and its conjugate momentum. So as any diffeomorphism invariant system, we will get some constraints. The system will be totally constrained. But the issue here is that these constraints, which are known as scalar and vector constraints, are going to be non-polynomial functions of our phase space variables. So in order to apply the Dirac program that we are familiar with, we will run into many obstacles. So we can as well say that there is no Dirac program for this formalism. We shouldn't be like so pessimistic, but later it was found a different formalism that could overcome these difficulties. So that's why we say, well, let's not keep trying to this with this formalism and let's switch to this other formalism. The LQE formalism also was introduced by Ashrekar. He introduced a change of variables, which was technically taking the square root of the metric. I like this concept because it's also what kind of what Dirac did with the Schrodinger equation. He was also trying to do something with spinors, and he was like, well, if I could only get the square root of this operator, I could do more many things. So I would say this is kind of the same idea here of, well, what if we take the square root of the metric and we work with this instead of the whole metric? And I think it's an interesting concept. But I get, so given that you introduce these new variables, you also introduce new symmetry, and you have an SU2 gauge symmetry into the system. Technically, it's SO3, but we have already dealt with that, and we showed how you can only work with SU2 instead of working with the SO3 gauge group. Then you can introduce the Ashrekar-Barbero variables. These ones are a flux and, well, the conjugate momentum to the connection and a connection. The flux is going to come later, sorry. So this connection now is a mixture between the Levi-Civita connection and extrinsic curvature. And you get in an extra parameter called the Mirzi parameter. So this parameter is not set a priori. You don't know what the value of this parameter should be. It was introduced to be a complex value. Then later, in order to match the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, it was set to another value. And nowadays, we work with a real value so that we don't have to impose extra reality conditions. But we could still think that this is kind of an open issue in the LQE formalism. But now, the point that we were interested in is now the constraints. Because you added the gauge symmetry, you get a new constraint, which is the Gauss constraint, which we are already familiar from 3D gravity. You keep the same constraints as in the ADM formalism, but now these constraints are polynomial functions of your phase space variables, which is nice, which is why you abandoned the ADM formalism in the first place. There are still first class constraints, which is again nice because you can form an algebra with them. The only issue is that still with one of the constraints, the scalar constraint, there's is not closed in the common sense of the word. So the Poisson bracket of the scalar constraint doesn't give you, again, polynomial functions of the phase space variables. So you gain something, you lose something. The formalism is not perfect. And just to finish, I think. So and just to finish, now we can apply the Dirac program into this formalism. Well, we can. We already we We are not 100% able to do it, but anyway, we try to do it because let's try. So we apply the Iraq program to the LQG formalism. And as you might know, we smear the phase space variables in order to get rid of Dirac deltas and integrals. So we switch from the flux, from the connections to holonomies, as usual, and from their conjugated momentum to fluxes, which have the same symbol. But, yeah. So basically, we have the holonomies along lines and fluxes in areas. So in this Dirac program, we use something called the Aztekar-Lewandowski measure to get a good definition of what the kinematical product between states is. So this has been shown to be well defined mathematically. And we know from our experience in 3D gravity that having the holonomies and the fluxes and the algebra between them, we can form spin network basis, which will be an orthonormal basis. And we can and this spin network basis is already applying the Gauss constraint in our system, so we already get one constraint applied. Furthermore, we can apply the Gauss constraint. Here we apply the vector constraints, which generates spatial diffeomorphisms, and we get something known as S-knots states, which are a little bit more tricky than the spin network states. But and basically, that's so far what we've done with quantum gravity.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, so it's so far what we have done, and what is left is the scalar constraint or the Hamiltonian constraint. And this is still an open issue, and this is what have been motivating the spin foam approach. Okay, so here, if we complete that, is if we try to apply S, here we get, we don't know yet, so to try to tackle this issue, then we're going to deal with spin foam. So what is the idea of spin foam? Okay, so it's a path integral representation. It try to get approach of the dynamics in EQG. And so, yeah, really the spin foam approach was initially motivated by the need that we need to understand the issue of the dynamics of LQG. So trying to construct a path integral representation of the theory. So in GR, the path integral is going to be about the transition between geometries, okay? So given an initial geometry on a three-dimensional slide, if you're in 4D gravity of space-time, or two-dimensional if it's 3D, we're going to deal with 3D in a moment. And the final one, the question is, what is the probability of transition? Okay, so this is the kind of question between geometry on an initial slide, geometry on a final slide, what is the probability of transition? So formally, what we can write is something like this. So you want to find the probability of transition between so some initial geometry on your and the idea is to give sense to this kind of expression. So here we're going to use the fact that we use tetrad on a connection. We have a measure term depending on which And so now so this is really formally, and so the question is how to give sense to this. Okay, how to, what is the probability of transition between two geometries? And so formally, if we write this like this, what does it mean? How can we define this? So this was the motivation of the spin form approach, which was introduced by Reisenberger and Carlo Rovelli. So Michael Reisenberger, I'm missing, yeah. And Carlo Rovelli. So already 20 years ago, more or less, in the first paper was in 1997. And so if we work, so what is the idea? Is to take what we have learned from the loop quantum gravity approach. So we are going to use the spin network basis. Okay, so in the spin network basis here, we want, the idea is that, so if I look at the now two spin networks, so here I can, each of my geometry can be described by a given spin network, and I want the physical of this. So the idea is that this can be expressed as a sum over histories, spin network histories. So let's kind of do a drawing. So I'm starting with, on an initial surface, I'm starting with spin network. I'm saying that the spin form is going to be, so telling me the possible transition amplitude between this initial spin form and a final one. So let's do one which is maybe a bit more. And so what would be a spin form? A spin form would be and here at some point you have some dynamics, non-trivial dynamics coming. Okay, so this would be a kind of picture of a spin form. So spin form is really too complex. And with some coloring. So it's a color. So complex. So what is that? Yeah, so I'm going to. So like a spin network, okay? It's really going to be a one additional dimension as a spin network. So a spin network is just a graph, but it's a colored graph because each of the edge are going to be decorated with SU2 representation, each of the intertwiner. Each of the vertices is decorated with an intertwiner. Okay, so you have this is your spin network. It's not only the graph. So the spin form, it's not only the two complex. So what is a two complex? So a two complex is going to be the set of elements where you have vertices, edges, and faces now. So you have this additional dimension. And you need a coloring. So what would be the coloring? So now, since here you start, you see this edge is going to propagate as a surface. Okay. So now, what is the coloring for a spin form? SU2 representation now is going to be associated to each faces of your graph, of your two complex. And intertwiner are going to be associated with edges. Okay. So spin form is. So what is a two complex? So two complex, this means that here you have vertices, edges and faces. Then usually when we are in the spin form language, then we try to differentiate the two complex from the graph. So on the graph for a spin network, instead of edge, we are going to call that link. And instead of vertex, we're going to call that node. Okay, but this is just some vocabulary to try to not to confuse. So here it will be, instead of E, it will be more L for link when you are at the level of the graph. And here instead of V, it will be N, for the N is for the node. And we keep the notation.
But too complex is basically you take like a graph and you like stretch it vertically and then you have like a cylinder and you call it a too complex.
Yeah, except that in addition, if the dynamic is non-trivial, you can get the final one doesn't have to be the initial one. So this means that inside your two complex, you have some additional. Yeah, okay. So it's not only the extension of this one; you also have some non-trivial dynamics happening, which can happen here. But this is the idea indeed of that. So what is the coloring here? So abstractly, I can cut it. See, so we're going to assign an irreducible representation of SU2 to each face. And an intertwiner to each edge now. And really, what is going to happen at the vertices inside is non-trivial. It's come from the dynamics, so this has to be computed, okay, depending on the model you choose here. And it's what we're going to do in a moment. So this is more or less a picture of a spin network. we are going to do today is to do it explicitly, to write explicitly what is a spin form in 3D, and then I'm going to tell you what is the approach in 4D. So this is your initial spin network. This gives you really the dynamics of this spin network and the final version of this. So what is now, let me give you what is the standard on that for the construction of a spin network amplitude. And then we're going to do it explicitly for 3D gravity. So you can use this general form, where here, normally, we say that it's the sum over histories, spin network histories, okay? So this would mean we want to sum over complex, that has the boundary of your complex is a given, it's your given graph, okay? So this is the graph of your network. Then we're expecting for some statistical weight, so which has to be determined by the full theory. Then we're going to sum over all. So the irreducible representation for the faces, the edges, then we get the product. So this is the amplitude associated to each face of your. Then the amplitude associated to each edges, which is going to depend. And I'm going to explain. And then a product over all vertices of your two complex. So what does it mean here? So first, why do we say that it's local? So this is, so here C is a two complex, okay? So this two complex is a set of vertices, edges, and faces. And on each faces, you know that you have an irreducible representation. of SU2. On each edge, you know that on each edge you know that you have a intertwiner. So here you're taking, we're going to have to each face an amplitude associated to this face. But you see that this amplitude, so the local mean that here we are saying that the amplitude of this face is going to depend only on the irreducible representation associated to this face. And if we consider an edge, okay, the amplitude associated to an edge is going to depend on the intertwiner of this edge. And then an edge usually is going to be at the boundary of several faces. Okay. So it's also going, so this amplitude is also going to depend on the irreducible representation associated to the faces bounded by this given edge. Okay? But so you see that it's local, meaning that we assume that this amplitude are not going to depend on all on the full complex. It's only depend on the specific face or on the specific edge, meaning that it has also related to the different faces associated to this edge. And then the one we are usually focusing on when we're computing a spin foam amplitude is this amplitude. It's the vertex amplitude where all the dynamics information is encoded here. Okay, so here is the vertex amplitude, and we are expecting that all the dynamical information is encoded in this vertex in the vertex and so when people are computing some spin foam amplitude, usually they focus on that. And of course, there's still some discussion on knowing if really this amplitude is just supposed to be a number depending only on this irreducible representation. And if, yeah, we're going to see that in 4D, when we look at the formalism, what we need to do is going to, we'll have some second class constraint to implement. And one question is maybe, in fact, the second class constraints are going to affect also this factor, and we cannot keep this kind of on that. Okay, so this is still under discussion. So that's also why I've chosen rather to present LQG, where the mathematics of LQG is really well defined and understood. Whereas from my point of view, the spin foam approach is a bit still less understood. So, and so just what is this sum? So this is really, yeah, we don't really know how to take this sum. So this is, it's not really well defined. And an approach to try to deal with this sum is what is called group field theory. So I'm not going. So if you're interested, I can give some reference, post some article on that in the wiki, but I'm not going to give details. So it's a bit a way to deal with this sum, which right now is not really well defined. What does it mean? How to take this sum over complex? Okay. So this is quite abstract, general. But now let's try to do explicitly what this would mean in 3D. Okay. So what are we trying to do? So what does it mean? That means that now we are going to start from the partition function in general can be written. So let me just give, again, something general. So we want to compute a partition function where we have, again, this kind. We want to give sense of this. And we're expecting that this can be written under this. So is it possible, starting from this, to derive this kind of expression? And we will see that in 3D, indeed, we can do that. So again, with the same thing, with the same on that. So the question is, can we do that explicitly? What is the recipe here? Can we, it's a kind of regularization. Okay, can we give sense to that, introducing some regularization here, and do we get this kind of expression? And so this is for the partition function. So the question is, can we can be derived directly as a regularization of your path integral? So let's do that explicitly in 3D. The 3D case, and in 3D, what we're going to get is what is called the Ponzano Reggie model. So our starting point is your well-known first order action, where if I don't, which can be written in terms of form just as a trace of E wedge F. So this is our starting point. So here, instead of this GRAE, I'm going to start with that. And so the formal path integral for 3D gravity then is just okay, so can we give sense to this now? So the first step here is, in addition, since 3D gravity is a topological theory, what we can do is introduce a discretization here of M. And in fact, it can even be shown that we are not going to lose any information. So the first step here is, so contrary to loop quantum gravity, where here we introduce by hand a discretization of the manifold M. So how do we do that? Here we introduce a triangulation that I'm going to denote like this. And indeed, in 3D, in fact, since it's topological, we can really replace M by a simplicial manifold. So meaning we are going to use simplices with similar topology, and we're not going to lose any information. Okay, so to do that, we introduce a triangulation here. And this triangulation is going to be obtained by gluing together tetrahedron. Okay, so now I need to introduce a bit this catalog of, so this is going to be our triangulation. So our building blocks are going to be tetrahedron. Okay, and then we're going to use the dual of this triangulation. Okay, so a tetrahedron is going to be dual to what in 3D? Yep. What is the dual of this? So it's in 3D, okay? So this is volume, three-dimensional object. What is my dual here? No, so the dual, like, so yesterday you look at the dual, so you were starting from, on a 2D surface, you were starting with a triangle, and then the dual of this triangle was a vertex, and each edge was dual to another edge. But this was in 2D, okay?
Another simplex?
No, it's a vertex, okay? So, because now, so I'm going to draw the picture, okay? Let's try.
Do you have to attach one line to each face?
Then, yeah, So then we're going to have so the next step. So this is triangles then. And the triangle is going to be dual to an edge. And then here we, let's call that the segment, each side of your triangle. So then the segment is going to be dual to a face. Okay, we don't have the shape exactly. And then a point here is going to be dual to a 3D region. So how do we draw this? So let's try to draw a bigger tetrahedron. Then, so this is dual to a vertex, and then I have an edge going out of each faces. So yeah, I'm not sure I succeed in drawing that very well, but so it's supposed to go out the back. Okay, so you have these four edges, and you see that now the picture is that your triangulation here, you have several tetrahedron glued together on some faces. So then you do the dual for each of the tetrahedron. So you see that around this segment, okay, you're going to get a face. And then around each point, then all these faces are going to close, for example, this point to determine a 3D region, okay? So this is the first step, is to introduce a discretization of your manifold. And since here we are in 3D, so it's a topological theory, we can really replace M by a simplicial manifold with a similar topology, and we are not losing any information at this stage. Okay, so what is the discretization we introduce? It's a triangulation formed by tetrahedron glued together. And we will need this to so then the next step is to discretize the variable. So this was step one. Then the step two is the discretization of the variables. And so here, the triad is going to be discretized along so when I have a star, this means I'm in the dual, and when I don't have any stars, this means I'm on the triangulation. Okay, so here it's going to be a SU2 element. I'm just going to integrate. So here there is no parallel transport as we define the flux in loop quantum gravity. Here it's just an integration over a line, okay, E, the edge of the triangulation. And then we have the connection, and again here now it's going to be defined as an holonomy, so we integrate over the edge of the dual graph, okay, so which in fact is going to be our spin network, and this is the same way as we did before, is the path order exponential of omega along this dual edge, and this is a SU2 group element. So of course then here we need to have an expression for the curvature tensor. And this is going to be a group element U, where here we need to take the product of all this SU2 element. Then we have a sign here. If it's a minus or a plus, it's the inverse of the group element itself, depending on the orientation. And here we're going to look at the oriented product of So what does it mean here? Okay, we said that so on these edges here, I have my XE, okay, and on the yellow part, I have my holonomy, okay, group element. And so now what we're going to do is the curvature is going to be a group element when you go around faces, okay? But you see that the face is dual to what I call E here. So here, if you want, it's E. Then here, it's my E dual. And so this means that I can label my group element by E. And what I'm saying is that I'm taking the oriented product, so I'm choosing an orientation for everything, of the group element going around this given edge, okay? So this segment is dual to this face, and this is just the product of the group element going around this given face. Okay, so instead of labeling my group element, I could also label that by F dual, and if you want, this E here would be the one belonging to my around the boundary of my face. Okay? So it's the same notation. But usually we don't use this one. Okay, so this is the discretization. So after this, we can now rewrite the action on the triangulation. So we start with, now it's defined in terms of the discrete variable. And instead of an integration, as I had before, I have a sum over all the E, which belong to my triangulation, okay, all the segments of my triangulation. And I can define this as trace of X, X, E, U, E. Okay, and I need to sum over all the edges of my triangulation. So this is why it's useful to, instead of working with the dual face here, work directly with the edge, because then you get the same labeling for all your objects. So now we can go to the discrete path integral and compute thing explicitly. So the path integral defined on my triangulation then is just going to be defined as, so here we consider all edge of my triangulation, and we need to integrate over but here we're going to use the Lebesgue measure, because you can see that SU2, the algebra SU2 is sum of two R3. Okay, so we use here the Lebesgue measure on R3, in fact, in practice. And so this is the first integration. Then we have the integration over, where is my, yeah, so this is the Z that I'm trying to write. So I have the integration over the E, which is replaced by the integration over the X. And then the integration over the A is going to be replaced by the integration over the holonomy. And here we're going to use the R measure that you're familiar with now. So now I need to take the product over all dual edge in the dual triangulation. And I get a product of, and now it's over SU2, the group. So this is just, here I'm using the R measure. Okay, so here, going from here, every place, what does it mean? Z, and now I'm going to use, instead of this Yeah, so it's here. So dE, d omega now has been replaced by these products and this integration. And now I'm going to use this discretized action. Return in term of x. OK, so now we can, in fact, compute this explicitly. And you're going to, what we're going to get is a well-known object for you now, because what we're going to get is the SIGJ symbol that we get when we solve the flatness constraint for a sphere in okay, any questions here? So let's do that explicitly, and then you're going to see that what we have done is really starting from this kind of formal expression using the discretization of the manifold and the variable we kind of introduce a regularization of this integral to get something exactly in this form, okay, using this sum and some product of amplitude associated to faces and amplitude associated to edges and the vertex amplitude, which is going to be the SIGJ, which is going to be the one which give all the dynamical information. Okay, so the starting point now, so we start from this and we want to compute that. So the first integration we can do is the integration over the x, e variables, okay? And we're going to use so that the so we want to integrate something like this. And this is going to be a delta, okay? Just, oops, doing that again. Delta of on the group element. But in fact, here it's a bit, well, there is a subtlety. Even if we integrated over SU2, this delta here is, in fact, the delta over SO3. SO3 and not SU2. And what does it mean? It means that now if we do the Planck-Schell decomposition, or if you want, we're going to expand that using the Peter-Weyl theorem, then we would end up only with irreducible representation, which are integer and not half-integer. But let's just forget about that right now and just write using the so the Peter, you remember that the Peter-Weyl theorem tells you that you can decompose all function over the group. So this is a delta function over the group, let's say SU2 here, even if in practice this is over SO3. And the result that you have is that a delta of SO3, it can be seen as a delta over SU2 to delta, where you have the g and minus g. Okay, but this is just to make things precise. So here, the Peter-Weyl theorem tells you that any function on the group can be decomposed on the bases which are given by the matrix, the Wigner matrices, okay, the matrix element. So here we can write this using representation. So this again is the dimension of the representation j. And this can be written as a trace J so using it, what does it mean? What do we have now? So again, we're going to need to do some recoupling theory that you like. So now we get that we get a sum over the J. And coming from here, okay, we still have the product over the dual edge of the dual triangulation with the integration over DGE star. And now this is given by a product over E of this trace sorry?
D, yeah.
D here, so it's a matrix representation of in the J representation, but I guess maybe you have seen that with the big knot. Or if you want, maybe you've seen that also, that if you use, so in what we have seen before, in the bases we have seen before, JMN, okay, if you look at the evaluation of our group edges, and this is exactly. Okay, so now it's the part where it's a bit complicated to maybe visualize. So what is this trace of DJ? So it's of E, of U of E, okay? And now I want to integrate over all group elements. So the question is, how many times this, in how many U of E, okay, this a given G of E star is going to appear, okay? So because if you see, let's say that this is my edge E1. So you see that this given G of E star is going to be in the U of E1, okay, because this is going to go around this edge. But it's also going to go around this edge here. So do I have colors here? Yeah, a blue one. And in fact, I need three colors. Because it's going to go around. So this edge, I have a U also going around this edge blue. OK, because you see that this, so this is really the link going out this face. Okay, and so my face have three segments, as I called them. So G of E is going to be E star. Here is going to be used to go around the U associated to each of these segments. Okay, I don't know if this is clear, but so you have a face going around the orange edge, a face going around the blue one, and a face going around the green one. Okay, so this means that here, any G of E here is going to appear in three, so each of them is in three U of E. Okay, so this means that here you, because this trace, the trace of U of E, can be decomposed as, so how can I write this? So this U of E is always a product, as I define it, is a product of all the GE star, okay? So here I don't know what I have, but okay, so if each of them is in three of these objects, so like this. So now what I'm going to do is to say that dj of ue can be written in terms of the individual ge star. And since I have three of them and I'm integrating over, if you remember what we did in the loop quantum gravity framework, when you do this, so what we're going to get for each g of, for each of this integration, what we get is something like this. a product of three matrix elements. So this should be familiar to you now because this is a 3J symbol. Okay, so this is again, so there is some sign because of course, depending on the orientation you choose, a given G of E is not going to be always in the same, with the same orientation. So at the end, you get a sign, a global sign. So this is going to be, and okay, so what does it mean here? This means that, so if I redo my drawing I had before. So what I've done is this integration over SU2, okay, for a given face of my tetrahedron here. And I have chosen this one, for example, let's say I've and so before, I had a G associated to this face because this face is dual to my, it's dual to my E star. Okay, so I have a G element. And in fact, this is going to be appearing in three. So I am integrating over three because it's appearing in three faces, okay? In three of the U. Okay, so I have this three. So then doing this integration, what now I get is that for each face, I'm going to do that for each face, I'm going to get kind of an intertwiner with its dual, say it is dual. And so this is the kind of thing we are doing, okay? So we're doing this integration, but now for each faces, I'm going to have an intertwiner, okay? And in fact, I'm going to do that for all the faces of my tetrahedron. And the four intertwiner are going to, as we have seen, it's the same thing that we are doing with the flatness. In fact, are going to combine to get the 6J symbol here, okay? So the intertwiner here associated to the four triangle. So let's forget about this side because this is going just to be important once we are going to glue together tetrahedron, but let's focus on this given tetrahedron. So now I'm going to do all the SU2 integration. So I'm going to get for each faces, now I'm going to have an intertwiner associated to each face of my tetrahedron. And this intertwiner are glued together into a spin network, which defines the quantum state at the boundary of this tetrahedron. And in the case of the tetrahedron, the dual is also a tetrahedron, so I get another tetrahedron. But so by combining these four intertwiners here, corresponding to this four triangle, we're going to get the 6J symbol. So here, what we're going to get if we finish this computation is, so then for a given tetrahedron, we will have now doing all the SU2 integration. So here I'm doing the SU2 integration. What I obtain is one intertwiner per face. And by combining, so now I can combine them by the four intertwiner corresponding to the four triangle of my given tetrahedron. I get the 6J symbol. Okay, and so here, if I finished just this calculation, what I'm going to get, and then for a given triangulation, I'm going to have a sum over the irreducible representation, a product over the edge with, so here I get a sign and the dimension and a product over the tetrahedron, which is also, if you want, in the dual picture, the vertices. And here what I get is some sig j symbol. And normally you should get a normalized sig j symbol after normalization. And so we started from this action, okay, the continuous action. We wrote formally what would be the path integral. We used some regularization using discretization of the manifold, the variables, and then you can compute explicitly that indeed what you get is something very similar to what it is here, except that here I'm not summing over this, but what I get is indeed, so I don't have any, in this result, I don't have any amplitude associated to the faces, but you see that this gives me the amplitude associated to the edges, and it's only dependent on J of A, so this is fine. And this is the amplitude associated to the vertex, or dually to a tetrahedron. And why? So in fact, historically, this model has been introduced already to look at when people were looking at topological invariant, okay? And then it appears that people were saying, oh, but this can be describing gravity looking at the semi-classical limit. And indeed, if you look now at the semi-classical limit of a sig j symbol, then you, when j goes to infinity, well, this has to be defined a bit more properly, but the idea is that you look now as a really big j, so this is a, and you get something with a volume term, but then you get the cosine of the red j action, which is an action describing discrete gravity. Okay, so this is red j action, and it's discrete gravity. Of course, there's still some discussion, why are we getting a cosine and not just an exponential? So it seems that we have, like, if we think about time going forward and backward, we have both signs, we have the plus and the minus. So yeah, there's still discussion about this, but the semi-classical limit still gives you this discrete gravity, the discrete action for gravity. Okay, so this is, so historically, this has been already, this model, the Ponzano-Rogel model was introduced not to describe gravity, but to look for topological invariant. And then it's more later on that it has been shown that it can be really built as a spin-form model, starting from this formal path integral doing this regularization and everything. So to conclude, since it's the last day I'm talking to you about gravity, I just want to quickly, I'm sorry for the delay, but it's going to be really fast. I just want to let you know what we're doing in 4D without details, but just to give you the picture.
What was the limit of J in the semi-classical approximation?
Sorry?
You said J was
to infinity. Yeah, you look at a really big J, okay? But it's, yeah, in fact, it's a bit more subtle. It's because it's J with, you have some H as H bar, which put to one here. So if you reduce the unit, usually it's equivalent to that, but you need to reintroduce to understand the meaning of this limit. Okay, so just quickly a few words on the 4D spin foam approach. And I just want to write one action and then. So the starting point is a reformulation of in 4D gravity. Because you see, what we know how to do is, in fact, we know how to build a spin foam model for any topological theory, okay, in any dimension. In any, so here it's what we call a BF theory, if you want. Okay, it's a topological theory, but this is topological in any dimension. And in any dimension, we know how to build the spin foam model. So the idea is that, in fact, in 4D, you can rewrite 4D gravity as a topological theory, a BF theory, plus some constraint. So this is the formulation we're using. So it's a reformulation, and it's called the Plevansky action, where you start with and really this is an action for gravity seen as a topological theory plus some constraint. And here the constraint is quadratic in the B. And really, so I. Okay, so this is really the starting point. So here you see that you have a BF action. So it's this path is topological. And this is a constraint. And what is this constraint doing? Is reintroducing, of course, geometrical degrees of freedom. And the solution of this constraint is that indeed, so you have several sectors, but one of the sectors is that indeed B can be written as with a sign, okay? So this is one of the sectors. So this is one of the solutions. And then you have another sector, which is also topological. So it's a bit more than gravity, but you have the gravity, you have a gravitational sector here. So let me just now say what is the idea of spin foam. So it's starting from this. So what then we are doing is we know how to quantize this part as a topological theory. So then the idea is, so let's do that. Let's quantize this part as a spin foam model, and then try to deal at the quantum level with the constraint. And the issue with this constraint is that these constraints are not first class. You have some second class constraint. Okay, and it's not very easy to deal with second class constraint at the quantum level. So there are still some discussion on how to impose the constraint. So the first model was the Barrett-Cren model, where all the so these constraints are called the simplicity constraint. So you get simplicity. So the issue is you have simplicity constraint. Which are second class. And we want to implement them directly at the quantum . So this first approach was to impose all the constraints strongly on the topological spin foam model. So at the end, we were killing too many degrees of freedom were killed. And as the vertex amplitude, which is the one giving the dynamics, we were having only one object. So there was no really interesting dynamics here. And then the new, the last new model are the EP RLFK model. And because all these people want to have their name, but well, that's why they all contributed in some way.
Why there is a line between?
So it's because, so this is for Engel, Pereira, Rovelli, Levin. So this is the first group of working on their side. And this is for Fredel and Krasnov. And they define independently in a bit different way, but at the end, the model is similar, but they did with a different approach and with some different arguments. So this is because, yeah, they work separately. but still the. So this is more or less the state of the art of spin form models. So now the question are, which kind of calculation can we do with this model? Can we compute some interesting physics with that? So for example, so Rovelli is really so an important guy in the loop quantum gravity cosmology is in Marseille. And with this group is really trying to say, okay, so let's consider that this model is a model of quantum gravity. What can we now compute with that? Can we compute some graviton propagator? What does it mean? Can we compute some transition amplitude? What does it mean? And all these kind of questions. So with this group is really working on this model and trying to see if we can extract some physics. Then there's still some controversy about the way this model has been defined. It's really, so contrary really to, again, loop quantum gravity, where the approach is really mathematically everything is well defined. Here there are many questions on the way the constraints have been taken into account, the way the discretization is introduced. It's a bit more by hand, so there are still discussion about that, but of course, it's still a way, the discretization can be seen really as a way of regularization. So now the question are, can we say something using this model? Okay, and I'm going to stop because I'm really late. Sorry about that.